Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Garrett Wilson. Wow! What a catch! Touchdown, Jets! That kid's amazing. Gibson on the return. Near side. I don't see any flags. Gibson inside the 30. Hits the Jets. And he's going to go! Jets win it! Touchdown, rookie Xavier Gibson. Game over.
Allen has time. Intercepted. Sauce Gardner's got it, Allen. Tripped up. He could not get past Jermaine Johnson. Oh, look at the speed of Breece Hall. He's done it again. Breece lightning. 62 yards for the touchdown.
And he's sacked again by Quinnen Williams. What a beast, number 95 for the Jets.
Listen. Thank you.
This is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it is time to tell the story of Hassan Reddick up to this point in time. I think it's worth getting to know the Jets' latest pass rusher, who on paper is the best pass rusher they've had since John Abraham, which was almost 20 years ago. So to talk about it, somebody who knows Hassan Reddick's work very well, especially the last 2 years in Philadelphia, producer for NBC Sports Philadelphia, produces Birds Huddle, produces Eagles pre- and post-game live on NBC Sports Philadelphia, Mike Mulhern. Mike, what's up, man?
I'm good, Scott. A little disappointed to hear that Hassan Reddick is a Jet, but, you know, it's a big get for you guys, certainly.
Yeah, excited to see him in Jet green, and we'll get into what happened and what went wrong in Philly. But first, let's talk about the early years of Hassan Reddick really quickly. He went to Haddon Heights High School in New Jersey, which is right near Philly. So local kid, he was right in that Jersey-Philly area. So he spent a lot of his career in his college days and high school years in that same area, played safety and running back during his high school years, only played 4 games in his senior year due to a fractured femur. And because of that, he went to Temple as a walk-on. Crazy to think about now in 2012, was a running back and a safety his freshman year, redshirted the 2012 season and saw his first game action in 2013. As a senior, though, in 2016, named first team All-American Athletic Conference with 65 tackles and 10 and a half sacks after he had been switched to defensive end. So they figured out where he should be playing, Mike. At this point in time, I would imagine that Eagles fans had him on their radar at least a little bit because a local kid from the area, then going to Temple, breaking out like this, certainly somebody that would pique the interest of local football fans.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, he was a single digit guy at Temple, which is kind of their, mark of a top tier player. Played on a very good Temple team under Matt Rhule. And then coming to that 2017 draft, I mean, the Eagles were looking pass rusher. He ended up going one pick before them at 13, I believe, to the Cardinals. They took Derek Barnett at 14. So, yeah, leading into that draft, that was certainly a guy that I assume Howie Roseman scouted extremely closely. The fans were certainly well aware of. But they end up with Derek Barnett. Didn't quite work out, although he did, recover a Tom Brady fumble to win a Super Bowl. So that's a feather in his cap, certainly. But yeah, to get Reddick a couple years later, he was a monster for them. But yeah, those early years, certainly at Temple, local kid. It seems lately they've got an affinity for those guys. They brought DeAndre Swift in. Kenny Pickett now is a North Jersey kind of guy, but grew up as an Eagles fan. So it seems like they've kind of pivoted to bringing those home kids, hometown kids home.
And let's not forget Saquon Barkley.
Certainly, yeah. He's like an hour and 15 minutes away. I mean, they used to do training camp up in Lehigh. That's like right where he grew up.
A lot of local guys on the Philadelphia roster now. Hasanrek was one of them at one point. And you mentioned before about the pre-draft process. In November, it was announced that Redick had accepted an invitation to play in the Senior Bowl. He was moved to inside linebacker during the Senior Bowl and impressed team reps and scouts after playing really well in practice, although this would prove to be very bad for his future that he did so well at inside linebacker during the practices. On January 28th, 2017, Redick recorded a game-high 9 tackles, tying Michigan's Ben Gideon as he played for then-Chicago Bears head coach John Fox for the North team that lost 16-15. His Senior Bowl performance really drove his draft stock up and made him one of the fastest risers in the draft process, taking him all the way to a potential top 20 pick, and as we said before, on the Eagles' radar, could have possibly been an Eagle if he'd still been on the board. Redick does really well in the drills too, 4.52 in the 40-yard dash. Also at Temple's Pro Day, ran the shuttle, the three cone, and did positional drills. Was projected to be a first-round pick by all the experts, ranked as the best linebacker prospect in the draft by ESPN and second best by SI, ranked the best outside linebacker by NFLDraftScout.com and second best linebacker by NFL media analyst Mike Mayock at the time, who's now back at NFL Network after a stint in the front office for the Raiders. So, Mike, you said that there were fans in the area that knew all about Redick and there was certainly interest there. Do you think that Roseman may have drafted him legitimately if he had been on the board, or did they see Barnett as more of what they needed, which was a prototypical outside linebacker?
Yeah, they were definitely looking more rusher, and I think to the point you made, it was almost a detriment to him that he flashed at the Senior Bowl as a straight-up all guy, because that's what the Cardinals drafted him as. And just kind of the Eagles' history is they just don't value that position, and it took a few years before, even in Arizona, he became just a straight pass rusher. So, yeah, I don't think they would have taken him. That draft was in Philadelphia. It would have been a heck of a story, you know, kid from right across the river being drafted by the Eagles on the Art Museum steps. That would have been a really cool moment. But I don't think it was ever really a possibility for them to take him in that draft.
As you said, he goes one pick earlier to the Arizona Cardinals. First linebacker selected and one of three Temple players picked that year with Deion Dawkins and Nate Hairston. Nate Hairston, of course, the former Jet. Redick also surpassed Paul Palmer to become Temple's second highest draft pick ever. And on June 8th, 2017, he signs with the Cardinals. 4-year deal, fully guaranteed, $13.4 million with a $7.94 million signing bonus, which of course would be peanuts now to him. But back then, I'm sure it was a nice chunk of change for a kid coming straight out of college. During training camp, Redick competed for the job as starting inside linebacker against Deion Buchanan, Carlos Dansby, and Xavier Gooden. Played the hybrid inside linebacker position after Buchanan suffered an ankle injury and missed the bulk of training camp. Bruce Arians, who was head coach at the time, named him the backup, quote, money linebacker behind Buchanan. So this is not great. When you pick a player, especially at a position like that, inside linebacker, which is typically considered a low impact position, everybody values the pass rushers, the offensive linemen, quarterbacks, playmakers. Inside linebacker is one of the lower impact positions. And here he is not starting right off the bat. Not a great sign.
No, certainly not. And it's interesting, the Cardinals organization seems to have a penchant for drafting guys of that ilk and not knowing what to do with them. You look at Isaiah Simmons, Zaven Collins, even just a couple of years ago, like they keep taking the same guy in the first round and not knowing how to use them. And it's different coaching staffs, different regimes, but they seem to do it every, you know, 3 or 4 years here. But yeah, Redick, you know, eventually has to go to the staff there in Arizona and just say, let me loose. Let me just rush the passer. This is what I can do. If he couldn't get on the field as a straight up off ball linebacker, and they had to play around with things and eventually trusted the player. And honestly, it took 4 years for that to happen.
Yeah, it absolutely did. And that's why they declined the 5th year option. And so in that 4th year, Redick was in his walk year. And so you might think, okay, his walk year, he's extra motivated. Maybe he's going to really rise to the occasion. And he did. But part of it, Mike, is exactly what you said. They finally put him where he belonged on the outside and told him, just go get the quarterback. At this point, we're starting to see him break out.
Yeah, we certainly did. And it's crazy because it kind of all started with one game. Interestingly enough, at MetLife Stadium, but against the Giants, he had a 5-sack game that year. And that kind of vaulted him, obviously, two double-digit sacks that season and kind of put him on the radar as one of the younger up-and-coming pass rushers in the league. But it's interesting that even after that kind of breakout year, I don't think teams across the league valued him that much anyway, because he, you know, didn't have much of a market that offseason.
And let's talk a little bit more about that year. After the Cardinals declined his year option, week six against the Cowboys, Monday Night Football, Reddick records two sacks on Andy Dalton in a 38-10 win. Week 14 against the Giants, like you said, he had a huge game with five sacks and three forced fumbles, an Arizona Cardinals franchise record, 10 sacks on the year. He's named the NFC Defensive Player of the Week for his performance in Week 14. How could you not be? That's a historical defensive performance. And then in Week 16 against the 49ers, he has another 1.5 sacks on C.J. Beathard, including a strip sack that was recovered by the Cardinals during a 2012 loss. So at this point, Reddick becomes a free agent, finally having broken through, finally being ready to show the league what he can do. But the funny thing about this is, as we noted, a lot of it came in chunks. 1.5 sacks in one game, two sacks in another, five in another. So the question was at this point, was Haason Reddick the real deal or was this a fluke? And was he just the guy that was going to get his sacks in bunches? He would get sacks in two or three games a year, and then the rest of the year wouldn't be as effective. We weren't going to find that out until he got to the Carolina Panthers, but it was certainly an interesting question for teams that were interested in him once he became a free agent.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that one game obviously jumped out to everyone, and I think it's pretty clear from, you know, what he was paid that offseason on a one-year deal from Carolina that teams did not believe that, you know, this was more than just a flash in the pan. And it's interesting that the team that did sign him, the Carolina Panthers, Matt Rhule had a heavy hand in personnel there. That's who he played for in college at Temple. So it's interesting how that worked out. The only team that really seemed to have a legitimate level of interest in him was a coach that knew him extremely well.
Yeah, Mike, like you said, he reunited with his old friend Matt Rhule in Carolina. We saw this a lot with Matt Rhule. He would go out and get guys that he trusted from when he was a head coach in college. He did it with Robbie Anderson when he took him away from the Jets a couple of years ago. Reddick only signs that one-year deal in Carolina, but has a big year there. So now he's put together two seasons in a row for two different teams. He's sort of proven himself, which caught the eye of the Eagles. So they bring the hometown kid in a couple of years after missing him by one pick, although, as we said, they probably wouldn't have taken him anyway. He signs a three-year, $45 million contract with the Eagles, and that will become important later because a lot of people believe that the amount of money he was getting paid is a big part of the reason he was traded, partly because he made that an issue. In week three of his first year with the Eagles, going up against the Commanders, he has 1.5 sacks, including a forced fumble in a 24-8 win. The next week, he forces two fumbles off sacks on Trevor Lawrence in a 29-21 win over the Jaguars, earning Defensive Player of the Week. As we all recall, during the 2022 NFC Championship game, Reddick records two sacks and forced a key fumble by 49ers QB Brock Purdy. Purdy's throwing arm was injured in the process of the strip sack, which basically ended the game for the 49ers because after that, they had no hope. They didn't even really have a quarterback. So the Eagles go on to secure a 31-7 victory over the 49ers and go to the Super Bowl. In the Super Bowl, Reddick was limited to just one tackle, wasn't as effective as he had been in the NFC Championship game. We know the Eagles lost that game. But Mike, he was a force in that NFC Championship game. And without him, who knows? Maybe the 49ers would have stood a chance of winning that game. So talk to me a little bit in detail about Reddick's first year in Philly. Very successful. You could make the case that he was the best player on that defense that year.
Yeah, I don't think that's a difficult case to make at all. I mean, 16 sacks in the regular season. And like you said, that NFC title game should go down in like Philadelphia sports lore. It's one of the all-time great performances I've seen on a stage like that. And it kind of gets forgotten, obviously, because they then turn around and lose the Super Bowl. But Reddick really didn't do much in that Super Bowl, and we don't have to get into the turf. We talked about that plenty. It was a disaster. Pass rushers couldn't get any footing, but both teams played on the same turf in that Super Bowl. But yeah, that was just a monster game. Knocks Purdy out, forces a fumble on that play, injures the UCL. Purdy's out for the game. Well, I guess he does come back, but can't throw the ball at all. He also laid a lick on Josh Johnson later in the game for another sack, recovered a fumble as well. just an all-time dominant performance. He's doing the gladiator thumbs down as a celebration. The place is going crazy. It was almost like the Coliseum. He's, you know, laying people out left and right. It was a tremendous performance in that game. And really, he was just a beast all season long, playing next to Fletcher Cox, who obviously commanded a lot of attention. Javon Hargrave, another guy, two, you know, elite defensive tackles that can rush the passer from the inside, really freed him up from the outside. And it's probably a little bit similar to what he's going to be dealing with in New York with the Jets now, with Quinnen Williams inside, should help him certainly. But yeah, he was a monster in 2022, certainly that first year, and honestly outperformed that contract right from the jump. I think he felt underpaid from the get-go, took a bit of a hometown discount, wanted to come to Philadelphia, wanted to be back home. But I think in his head all along felt he should have gotten paid more. Double-digit sack guys generally, you know, 2 years in a row, two different schemes. You would have thought he would have gotten more money there. He did not. And as you mentioned, that eventually does become a huge sticking point here.
Well, especially, Mike, since he did it 2 years in a row, two different teams, two different schemes. And like you said, 16 sacks and so many huge plays in very important spots. It didn't quite work out the same in 2023. And a lot of it's not his fault. The Eagles just weren't as good in 2023. The defense really fell apart. Reddick dropped a little bit. He had 16 sacks, as you said, in 2022. 2023, he only had 11. But he was a very effective pass rusher. He was the only guy that could consistently get to the quarterback. Talk to me a little bit about Haason Reddick, year number two, because like I said, maybe not quite as good as 2022. Would have been hard to repeat that performance. But still, 4 years in a row now with double-digit sacks. Again, two different teams. And for a team that desperately needed him to step up, he did for the second year in a row. Big performances here by Haason Reddick. Unfortunately, the Eagles' season wasn't as successful. But like I said, another big year for the star pass rusher.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Just like the whole team, he kind of faded down the stretch as they did the last four games of the regular season. No sacks, no sacks in the playoffs. Yeah, it's interesting because they really beat up on teams in 2022, had big leads. So I think that helped to pad the sack numbers a little bit. Maybe that gets you from 11 to 16. They played some bad quarterbacks that year as well, played much better teams this past season. So they didn't have as many just pin your ears back, go get them, finish the game type of situations. But he still had some largely impactful games, had a two-sack performance against Matthew Stafford. It was pretty much like back-to-back plays in the fourth quarter on the road against the Rams that just ended that game. So yeah, he still, you know, had a heck of a year. And I think one of the issues kind of became they played he and Josh Sweat a ton of snaps. They've always been a rotate their pass rushers organization, much like the Jets. But early in that season, I think they just didn't have the depth that they had hoped. They drafted Nolan Smith 30th overall, thought he was going to be more of a part of the rotation. They had Derek Barnett, who I mentioned previously, was their first-round pick in that same draft. They eventually cut him. He goes to Houston and kind of has a little bit of a career resurgence. But they just didn't have the pieces behind Reddick to kind of limit the snaps, and I think that caused him to wear out a little bit down the stretch. They also make the coordinator change, which is still kind of mind-boggling, that they go from Sean Desai to Matt Patricia midstream. One of the worst decisions that I can recall in football history. Talk about your all-time backfires. I mean, that was an absolute disaster. Reddick's not happy. He's dropping into coverage a lot. And, you know, in certain schemes, you're going to drop. But I think if you're a pass rusher, you're okay to drop if someone else is coming who's like a nickel or a safety coming on a blitz that, you know, they're vacating a zone and you're dropping into it. But a lot of it, they were playing a lot of five-man fronts because they couldn't fit the run. And so they were playing five-man fronts to try to stop the run. But a lot of teams were just dictating who was going to drop by motioning guys over. So they kind of flood the side of the field that he was on. And by rule, he has to drop. Otherwise, they don't have enough numbers. So it was a disaster. He did not like being a part of that. And I think knowing his contract situation, he knew, you know, he was underpaid. He mentioned it before the season that he felt he was very underpaid. But it was just 1 year into that three-year deal. So I think in his head, he's thinking, I want to produce more. I want to get higher sack numbers. So there's some chatter now, maybe on the way out. Could be, you know, the team kind of sullying the reputation a bit to soften the blow of trading away a guy who was very popular here in Philadelphia, but saying he was chasing sacks, which honestly he might have been doing a little bit when everything's falling apart. Guys tend to, you know, maybe look out for themselves a little bit more than they do the team.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Mike, anytime the answer is Matt Patricia, you're asking the wrong question. That's all I have to say about
absolutely
any Matt Patricia. He should never be part of an important equation. But I will say this, as far as Hassan Reddick, and I think this is a lot of the talk in Philly right now, you've got a guy who was one of the best pass rushers in the league, fifth the last 4 years in total sacks, one of only two players in the league to have double-digit sacks 4 years in a row. And you've got a team in the Eagles who you would assume are ready to continue competing for a Super Bowl. Getting rid of arguably your best defensive player is a head-scratching move, especially when you go out and pay somebody like Bryce Huff. The theory that I've heard is that Howie Roseman had decided that he wanted to get younger. He didn't want to pay Hassan Reddick, so he figured he'd strike now, pay the younger Bryce Huff, who he's betting on becoming a more improved overall player and continuing to ascend as a pass rusher, and trade Hassan Reddick a year early, get something for him before he were to lose him in free agency. But you and I have talked about this outside of the podcast. You would think that a team that's ready to win now would just keep Hassan Reddick, hang on to him for another year, make him sing for his supper, knowing that he was going to have to perform for his next contract, whether it was with Philly or somebody else, and you would get the most out of him because he was going to try and get that big contract. Instead, they move on. They get a third rounder that could become a second rounder, but it won't because, as you said before, the Jets are a rotation-heavy defense when it comes to their edge players and really everybody. They don't like to burn guys out. There's no way he's going to play 67.5% of the snaps.
I was looking. Jermaine Johnson was 66%. I just feel like it's such a make-or-break year for the Jets that I know everyone thinks that they're a heavy rotation, and obviously they have bodies. You figure Will McDonald takes on a bigger role, but I just think he's that good of a player. Everyone's going to try to win. You know, Joe Douglas on the hot seat, Robert Saleh on the hot seat, Rodgers on the way. I just don't think they're going to like be in a spot. Obviously, they're not going to limit it on purpose. I don't think. I think if he stays healthy, he's going to get there. He's done it each of the last 4 years. He's been well into the 70% of snaps. He's been double-digit sack guy, so I actually do think it's going to end up a second rounder, but maybe we'll make a side bet on that.
Hey, listen, it's not impossible, but I'll say this. If he does end up playing more than 67.5% of the snaps, then I think it'll probably be worth it to the Jets to trade a second rounder a couple of years from now, because that'll mean that he's really producing. We'll see what happens in terms of the Jets maybe getting an extension done with Hassan Reddick, or whether they just have him play 1 year and maybe do something where they guarantee him a little bit more money, turn it into a signing bonus or something like that. But Mike, your final thoughts here on the Jets acquisition here, what it'll mean for the Jets, especially in a win now year, and his departure from Philly. Was it a matter of him having a falling out in the locker room where people annoyed about him harping on the contract? I know there was talk that he wasn't going to show up for training camp as a way to protest. Was this Howie Roseman just doing what Howie Roseman does with contracts and moving off of players a year too early rather than a year too late? Tell me everything from the Philly side and then what you think this means for the Jets.
So I think from the Philly side, I do think Howie Roseman just kind of put a valuation on the player that is not as high as what the player thinks he's worth. And they were just never going to come to an agreement. I still think it's crazy that this news first dropped that they allowed him to seek a trade, which kind of got portrayed in the media that Reddick was asking for a trade. That was quickly, you know, he put that fire out. But that was on Super Bowl Sunday. Like, to put that out there on that day when everyone's kind of geared up for football, just, you know, feed a little something to Ian Rappaport and Schefter that, you know, Reddick is available. I think they probably knew then that they were never going to come to an agreement. I still don't know why they don't value him more. I mean, I look at a guy like Danielle Hunter, who is very similar in profile, has four double-digit sack seasons in the last 5 years. Last year, he had over 16, much like Reddick did in 2022. He gets a two-year, $49 million contract. So he's getting – oh, and that, I believe that was fully guaranteed. So he's got like 25 a year. I just kind of thought Howie Roseman would value this player, would pay this player. He's produced. He's been great. I don't know how much locker room friction there was. I just think it was more a matter of Howie Roseman making evaluation on him and not being willing to go above that number. And as far as Reddick goes, I don't think they were willing to, you know, let him play out the year. I think they were worried about what that could do chemistry wise. And I just think they don't like to treat players that way. Generally, they're a very player friendly organization. They try to take care of guys. A year before Darius Slay, they were going to cut him. They kind of let him peruse the market, see what was out there for him. They end up giving him a bump. He kind of wasn't as, you know, dug in on what he thought he was worth. He was willing to compromise. They came to an agreement and brought him back. They just did it with Avante Maddox, a guy who was due way too much money for a guy who's hurt a lot. They cut him. They let him see what's out there, and then they bring him back. They want to take care of their guys. I think they just thought the gap was way too far. I think they put that out there on Super Bowl Sunday, and they knew from that moment on there was almost no way this guy was coming back because somebody was going to pay him or he was going to be unhappy. There was no in-between. They were never going to find a number in the middle, like 2 years, $20 million maybe, that would have satisfied him. He wants to be paid like one of the top guys. Now, I do think once you change teams, though, it kind of changes your perspective. You look at Stephon Diggs as well. You know, he's unhappy in Buffalo. Obviously, he got paid a significant amount of money, so it's not quite the same situation. But I think Reddick is more willing to use the phrase you did, to sing for his supper this year. He kind of knows he's got to at this point. And I mean, the video the Jets put out of him meeting Sauce Gardner, and he's just rattling off everybody on the team, I'm sure that was like, that got you go. I mean, as he's doing, I'm like, oh my God, this defense is going to be unbelievable. I think he's a stud. I think he, you know, he was in the defensive player of the year running in 2022. He goes head to head, you know, obviously on opposite sides of Nick Bosa in that NFC title game, outperforms him, looks like the most dominant player on the field. He's got that in him. You put him on that defense, I think he's going to be an absolute monster. He's going to win one-on-ones. I love Jermaine Johnson when he was coming out. He's proven to be an excellent player already. You have him on the other side, Quinnen in the middle. You got two stud linebackers. I mean, that defense should be elite, elite. I'm glad they're not on the Eagles' schedule this year, because I saw firsthand what they did to the Eagles last year. They handed them that first loss, and that wasn't a fluke. They beat them up. I mean, that defense, that was probably one of the better games they played all year. You add, you know, a guy who had, I believe, 2.5 sacks in that game on the other side, in Reddick. Now you put him on your side. I think he's going to be a stud. Congratulations to you guys. And we'll take our second round pick in 2026, please.
Really looking forward to watching him. I think you're going to enjoy Bryce Huff too. Really good player. A lot of Jets fans disappointed that he didn't stick around, but obviously now very excited to see Hassan Reddick come into town. Mike Mulhern, producer for NBC Sports Philadelphia, produces Birds Huddle, which airs daily on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Also, Eagles pre and post game. Make sure you check out everything that's going on there. Check out everything at playlikeajet.com. And be sure to give us a 5-star review for the podcast on iTunes if you haven't done that already. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital and playlikeajet.com.